Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 5:02 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 20th. Well, I apologise for the lateness of the recording. I've been on a plane for the last 11 and a half hours, so that certainly had an impact on the timing of the recording. But there's some very clear evidence here that the downtrend in Chinese stocks that has been in place for over a year is over. They have been clamping down on speculative behavior in China now for the last few years, with successive avenues available of liquidity being cut off. Everything from access to funding from the main state-owned banks to the regional banks and to infrastructure development and mid-sized firms has basically been cut off. Then P2P lending was killed off and they've started to allow defaults. Then they stopped the ability to issue US dollar denominated debt because it had exploded, going from pretty much zero to $450 billion in the space of a year and a half. So that has all contributed to the shadow banking sector contracting, and basically now it is no longer a factor within the Chinese economy. Of course, all of that has resulted in a slowdown in consumer behavior. When, for example, we saw yesterday that Blackmores in Australia, which generates a considerable amount of revenue from China, it's upwards of 29%, if my memory serves, then that kind of pullback is very representative of the kind of delaying in purchases that Chinese consumers have been doing. So with the job of tightening pretty much done and a clearly slowing economic activity at home, China has got every incentive to bring back some form of stimulus. That's particularly true when they are also concurrently trying to expand the tax base. Now, there have been some very high-profile tax cheats among the uber-rich in China, so they're certainly making an example of the very wealthiest in society first. Of course, those are all celebrities rather than people that are very closely connected to the party, but you can't have everything. But now they're going to try and bring an additional 50 million people into the tax bracket. So they're cutting taxes on one side, but they're going to enforce collection much more aggressively, and that's a much bigger issue. So that is also going to represent a headwind for the economy. Now, if they continue with that, then they'd end up with a recession, and the last thing that the Chinese administration wants is a recession, not least when you're looking at 2020 as being the 100th year of Communist Party rule. The Communist Party. So that's a very significant milestone, and they want to have the economy humming by the time we get to that. So if they want that, they're going to have to start to intervene soon. That's what we're starting to see now. So the stock market has broken its downtrend. And I think we have to remember that the stock market is a discounting mechanism. It's looking at future cash flows, and it is looking increasingly better. The fact that you have a more optimistic view on China now than we've had for at least 18 months has been a causal effect or factor in copper prices breaking on the upside. So this has now completed what was effectively a 7-month base formation. It is trading back above the trend mean. This does look like a more bullish environment now. When we look at nickel, for example, it has been rallying, then it pulled back. It absolutely needed to find support in the region of the trend mean, and that is exactly what it has done. So we've had two consecutive days on the upside and rather dynamic in nature. So that now suggests we have a higher reaction low for nickel prices. Then I think it's rather interesting that we have a condition in Indonesia right now where tin producers, which export just about all of their production, are complaining that the volatility in prices is impacting their ability to make any money at all. Well, that rather suggests that the marginal cost of production is somewhere around $20,000. that occasionally prices drop below that, but then they tend to bounce back up again. So $20,000 is probably about where the marginal cost of production is. That's suggesting that if we do get a ramp up again in terms of global demand, then there's the potential for it to break up and away from its most recent range. I think it's worth just rounding out looking at the industrial resources, because if China is moving back into a more stimulative environment, then that could potentially be really quite bullish. So, for example, lead prices are now still pretty close to the lower side of their range, but there has been a succession of higher reaction lows over the last few months. And then, when we look at the zinc price, well, zinc and lead generally tend to trade in a reasonably similar manner, but zinc has now also had a succession of higher reaction lows over the last few months, but this looks like it is encountering, or at least developing, support at the upper side of the underlying base formation that persisted from the peak back in 2009. So this is looking much more bullish today than it has done for really quite some time. Well, there's commonality now starting to emerge in the industrial resources. It's being mirrored by the continued advance that we're seeing in gold. So the gold price has also marched steadily higher over the last few months. It's coming right up to the upper side of its range. It's been ranging below $1,400 since 2013. So if it can sustain a move above $1,400, we're back in a demand-dominated environment, not just for the short term, but the medium term. And I think that one of the more important points, and it's something that when whoops, I haven't typed that correct. When we look at the inflation-adjusted spot price for gold, one of the points I think is rather interesting is we had a very big scare in terms of inflation back in the 1970s. Interest rates went up aggressively to stamp it out. We're at a point today where there are increasingly vociferous calls for wage hikes, and that's something that is not, I think, really just for one country, but lots. So there is a very widespread demand for more pay from a lot of people. And then you have the fact that central banks are not really in a position to raise interest rates because of the fragility that they assume is in the markets. Well, of course, part of the reason for that is because the market is addicted to liquidity, having really existed upon it for much of the last decade. So that there is the real potential that we're going to have a negative real interest rate environment. And some people tend to think about gold being a hedge against inflation and others against deflation, but I think it's much better to think about it is that gold does best in a negative real interest rate environment. So when central banks can't or won't raise interest rates quick enough to stamp out inflation, when the governments do whatever they can to understate inflation so that they don't have to increase social payments. Those are the kinds of conditions that really do help to, I think, spur interest in gold. And I think that is what we're starting to see here right now. The very fact that gold has not given up all of the advance that we saw between 2000 and 2011 is, I think, rather bullish. If it can break up and out of this range, not only in nominal terms, but in inflation-adjusted terms, well, that would really suggest that a run back up towards the peak wouldn't be at all unlikely, and potentially even more than that. So we're at a rather important juncture here for precious metals. They haven't quite, or sorry, gold hasn't quite yet been able to break away from its range, but it is a more interesting market today than it has been at any time, really, for at least the last few years. I definitely thought that we were on our way in the summer of last year, and then the characteristic volatility of gold came back to force, so we have to be at least prepared that it could pull back in the not too distant future, because upside breaks are seldom sustained. In commodities, we do tend to get these rather choppy environments, and they are best bought following pullbacks. So I think there will be a lot of people lining up to buy gold if it does in fact pull back, because the conditions that are evolving out there on the ma in the macro universe are not going to disappear overnight. Then when we look at oil prices, well, oil has pulled back very sharply over the last few months, and now it's been rebounding. It broke up and out of its most recent range just last week, and it is now right in the region of its trend mean. But there has been a distinct absence of downward dynamics. There's certainly nothing on the downside similar to what the kind of declines that we saw in October, November, and December. This continues to look like a rebound situation. I continue to think that it's unlikely we're going to see oil prices sustain a move above $85. There is a lot of supply that comes into the market at those levels, but likewise, there is plenty of supply gets withdrawn from the market when prices drop below 50. That really sets us up for a ranging environment. Now, if we go back and think then about the kinds of markets that will do well if China starts to stimulate, well, Europe is definitely in that category. The Eurostoxx index has now broken the sequence of lower rally highs. It is back above its trend mean, and this is looking like a more impressive rebound. If China continues to advance, then it will likely take Europe with it. Significant declines below the trend mean over the course of the last decade have resulted in rebounds, and certainly the rebound that we saw in 2016 and 17 did not take us up to new highs, and this is an index that still is not particularly consistent. So it's definitely been a more difficult market to deal with, but the chances are that if China's stimulating, then that will create demand for Europe's exports, and Europe needs those exports more than just about anything else. Then when we look at what's going on in Japan, well, the Nikkei is right in the region of its trend mean, and it was in negative territory in here today. A good part of the way people are viewing the Japanese market is going to be influenced by what happens with the yen. The dollar has been rallying against it. It is, though, right in the region of the trend mean as well. So if the dollar can continue to advance from here, then that is likely to act as a tailwind for the Nikkei in nominal terms. But if the dollar fails here, well, then that is going to represent a challenge for Japan. Kuroda this week has been saying that the Bank of Japan is ready to step in with additional stimulus. They are not going to tolerate the kind of rally that the yen put in at the turn of the year. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be lining up to start printing with the kind of enthusiasm that would be required to really start to see the yen weaken through 115. So I do think that with Japan we're going to get at least some pause and consolidation. Then Australia is also another market that really should do well if China is doing better. And the ASX 200 has been resurgent over the last few weeks, and it is now squarely back above the trend mean. There is obviously a lot of angst and are potentially the people thinking about bargains in the Australian property market. The health of the banking sector is obviously a very significant issue, and the Royal Commission is, well, I think the upshot of the Royal Commission is likely that the banks are going to be more closely regulated. So that is likely to act as a headwind for the property market. But as long as we continue to see that the Chinese economy is being stimulated, then that should continue to stoke demand for Chinese exports, not least natural gas, coal, and iron ore. Well, Glencore in here today was, or I think bowed to popular sentiment. And they have now decided that they're going to start reducing the quantity of coal that they are producing. So I think that's an issue for the company. They have been doing very well from being one of the world's largest producers of coal. The fact that public sentiment has turned so acutely against the sector, most particularly in the USA, where natural gas is so cheap that it is economic with coal. But I think we at least have to pay some consideration to the fact that more than half of the global population rely on coal for heating, and that represents a continued bull market. Well, Glencore is right in the region of the trend mean now, and it is, I think, likely that it's going to be able to sustain a move up and out of it, out of this range. Rio Tinto, with its focus on iron ore and aluminium, has been rallying because of the issues that Vale has had, and it was up another percent in here today, but so now it's right in the region of its trend mean. Then BHP, which I should have just re I was just going to say they've changed their ticker, but I forgot to type it in. Well, when we look at the chart, it has now broken on the upside. This has been very clearly resurgent. There has been a clear succession of higher reaction lows since 2016. BHP has got both oil and energy, as well as iron ore and a number of other industrial resources, and it remains in a reasonably consistent advance. So we're definitely seeing that anything that is even remotely influenced by Chinese stimulus is doing better right now. So there is, I think, an argument at least that we are on the cusp of a global reflation trade. So that is likely to have an impact on bonds, that there is less of a if we're going to have a reflation trade with which is going to be fueled by Chinese stimulus, then is that going to delay the potential for a recession in the USA? One of the reasons why the bond market has been so steady has been because investors are betting very clearly that we are going to see a complete cessation of interest rate hikes from the Fed, that they are going to stop reducing the size of the balance sheet, and that the next significant move is going to be a cut. Well, if we do get economic activity starting to improve again because of stimulative activities, whether that is going to be monetary policy or fiscal policy in Europe, in the USA, in China, and in Japan, then those are the kinds of conditions that are going to help to stimulate economic activity and animal spirits in the stock market. The fact that we have had this rebound and that it is so persistent is certainly encouraging. It would be beyond normal if we continue to see this advance without getting some form of consolidation. When we look at the S&P 500, it is right in the region of its peak from October, November, and December. So I think it is natural that we should have at least some consolidation. If any kind of consolidation we get happens above the trend mean, well, then that would be really very positive. What I think is particularly interesting is that when we look at the S&P 500, then it has, oh golly, I'm not typing very well, it has now got back to the region of the October, November, December highs, whereas the Russell 2000 has broken that sequence. Of course, the S&P had equal highs, and the Russell still had lower highs, but the Russell has now broken up to broken that sequence of lower highs. So I think that is meaningful. One of the most important points, of course, is that the Russell 2000 is interest rate sensitive, and so are semiconductor shares. The semiconductors index has been continuing to rally. It has also broken its sequence of lower rally highs. And it has moved meaningfully above the trend mean, so it does have room in which to consolidate. But this is much more, I think, about improving perceptions about the likelihood for a deal in terms of the trade war, rather than any other particular factor about interest rates. I think the one of the primary reasons that the semiconductors index had pulled back so violently was because of that Bloomberg story on the interdiction of the supply chain. Then the banking sector in the USA today, in fact it was yesterday, but it improved upon its performance today. It broke up and out of its range. So that's also, I think, really quite impressive that we had a very significant rebound. We had a little range forming, and now we're seeing that it is breaking up and out of that range. This is about the most attractive, probably the best case scenario one could hope for, that you get a rebound and then the consolidation that occurs is shallow. And that's exactly what we've seen. So now it's really quite easy to analyze. It has been able to push back above the trend mean, and as long as it can hold the 300 area, well, then we're probably still in a demand-dominated environment. Well, if banks are starting to return to performance, and small caps and semiconductors are all starting to return to positions of outperformance, the chances are that's likely to be rather supportive of the S&P 500 or the broader market being able to push up and through its sequence of lower rally highs. Now we have the VIX index, and that is now below 15, and it came down in a pretty dynamic manner in here today, so that's extending the decline. Well, that is also suggesting that investor demand for a safe haven hedge from the stock market is reducing. So how do we square the fact that stock markets and now gold are doing so much better? And obviously the dollar is going to be a part of that, but there is another reason for it, and it's simple enough that people are pricing in that we're going to get an inflationary growth spurt. So we'll get some growth, but then we'll also get an uptick in inflation. That's probably going to be one of the factors. The fact, of course, that when we think about the global economy, then the USA is still the growth leader. Despite the fact that growth is likely to decelerate this year, there is, I think, the likelihood too that it is still going to be the growth leader. So we're still in a reasonably bullish environment. And the fact that gold prices are rallying, I think that really does suggest that people are, if they're looking for a hedge, what they are looking for is to hedge the fact that we are approaching a period of global fiscal stimulus, which is likely to create a negative real interest rate environment. That generally tends to be bullish for stocks too. So I think that is what the clearest conclusion we can come to from the wider market environment, particularly when we start to string together all of these different charts. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.